good morning. Wow, there's a lot of faces I don't know. Hi, I'm Tom. I'm the lead pastor here at Mountain View, and I just drank the bottom of my coffee that had a bunch of chewy stuff in it, coffee grounds. So if you see me smacking my lips here for just a second, I'm deeply apologetic that that's our first introduction. So anyway, and if you see something black, it's just a coffee ground in my teeth, all right, as I smile at you. Are we okay with that? At Mountain View, we just like to be real, all right? This is what you get. Welcome. Glad you're here. We are wrapping up a series in the book of Jeremiah, and there's a part of me that thinks that we could have kept going in the book of Jeremiah. I know some of you are like, please get us out of here, all right? And so we're going to start a four-part series next week in the book of Luke. Talk about Christmas, because that's what time of year it is, right? And so the book of Jeremiah, let me just recap for those of us who might not have been around and those of us who have been around, but the book of Jeremiah is about the last days of the kingdom of Oh, wow, look at Mr. Steve. I do. Everybody tell Steve, wow. Like, that's just... much better. You'll appreciate that, I promise. So the book of Jeremiah is about the end days of the kingdom of Judah. And the prophet, his name is Jeremiah. He was likely called by God to be a prophet around the ages of 17 or 18. He's known as the weeping prophet. He also wrote the book of Lamentations, which is all about lamenting, right? And this idea of weeping. And the reason he's known as the weeping prophet is because his ministry was actually incredibly challenging. It was incredibly difficult. It was really, really hard. And so Jeremiah lived probably during one of the most turbulent times in the history of Israel. And this is about 600 years before the birth of Jesus. And so he warns the people, he warns the leaders, that the nation Babylon is going to invade and lead them to an exile. And you might wonder why. Why is this the issue? And this is why. Because the people continued to persist in their habits. They continued to reject God's promises. They ignored God's promises. And so because of this, they were going to face some really hard times and some very difficult challenges and circumstances. And so then at the end of the book, though, we get some of this promise of restoration, that God's going to heal, that there's going to be this new covenant. His new covenant has a name, and his name is Jesus. And then they're going to return to their promised land. And the end of Jeremiah reminds us that there's always a hopeful future, unless you're Jeremiah. And I read Jeremiah, and I'm waiting for this perfect book ending where everybody turns and everybody celebrates what Jeremiah had done, but instead Jeremiah gets taken to Egypt and he dies. And that's the end. And I'm like, that sucks. Like, it does. It's terrible. I'm thinking he did all of this for all of these years and he didn't even get to see the fruit from all of his labor, all of the hard work, everything that he had done. He doesn't even get to see God restore and the hope that he talked about and the hope that he preached about. He doesn't even get to see all of this. And so, Jeremiah, he was rejected, ridiculed, he was mocked, he was beaten. We're going to see today he was thrown into a cistern. He spent the majority of his life proclaiming a message from God that most of the people didn't want to hear. And so when you start thinking about this, that was his life. Jeremiah, he understood hardship, he understood weariness, he understood discouragement. And we at Mountain View, we've spent 9 weeks looking at Jeremiah, specifically at his life and his calling, because if you read the whole book, there's a lot there, but there are these golden nuggets we can mine for. And it's been our desire that this series would help us pursue some sort of spiritual resilience, that we would pursue a level of courage and authenticity that matters. We've been challenged, as we're going to talk about in just a moment, to run with the horses, not just run with man, instead of settling for mediocrity. And so we've reflected on Jeremiah's life, and we've drawn similarities to our own lives and our own spiritual faith journeys. And every week it's been our hope that you'd be challenged to step out of complacency, to step out of comfort, and to actually pursue a life that reflects God's purpose and excellence by living an authentic life, a bold, authentic life of faith. Does that make sense? Yeah, I've lost you. That's what I was worried about. And so it's been our prayer, right? It really has. It's been our prayer that our hearts would be stirred. That's been the goal, that we would have a thirst actually for dissatisfaction with anything less than our very best. And I wanted us to really believe that the only way we can actually live our very best lives, the only way we can actually do this is with radical faith in God. And so I wanted us to be stretched. I wanted us to be pulled out of our habits and our routines, out of our empty and meaningless work, so that we could actually run with the horses. And so back to running with the horses, Jeremiah, he's frustrated. And he goes to God about in the middle of the book, chapter 12, and he starts complaining. And he tells God, this isn't cool. We don't like this. I'm frustrated. This is what Jeremiah chapter 12, verse 1 says. It says, "Righteous are you, O Lord, when I complain to you." It's never good to start a prayer that way. Like, God, I'm so glad you're good and you can listen to me whine and complain and groan, right? And so, "Righteous are you, O Lord, when I complain to you, yet I would plead my case before you." And here he goes. "Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why do all who are treacherous, why do they thrive? You plant them, they take root, they grow, they produce fruit. You are near in their mouth and far from their heart. But you, O Lord, you know me, you see me, and you test my heart toward you." And I love it. He's vulnerable. "Pull them out like a sheep for the slaughter and set them apart on the day of slaughter. How long will the land mourn and the grass of every field wither for the evil of those who dwell in it? The beasts and the birds are swept away because they said, 'He will not see our latter end.'" And so Jeremiah is just saying, God, look around. Can't you see how terrible these things are? Can't you see how bad the circumstances are? God, can't you see it? Why are these things going on? Why aren't you doing anything about it? And these are great questions, because when Jeremiah is torn down, when Jeremiah is worn out, when Jeremiah has faced all sorts of opposition than most of us can even begin to fathom, when Jeremiah was about to throw in the towel, when Jeremiah's prayer to God in the previous chapter is, "Just let me die." Have you ever been there? Like, God, this is not fun. Life is terrible. The circumstances are hard. I think it would just be better if I was dead. When Jeremiah was about to deny his call and the mission that God had for him, and he just wanted to be like everyone else, God answers him. And I think this is the whole point, I think, of the book. Verse 5, "If you have raced with man on foot and they've worn you out, they've wearied you out, how are you going to compete with the horses? And if in a safe land you are so trusting, what are you going to do when you're outside in the thicket of the Jordan?" In other words, I love God's response. Jeremiah, life's hard. It's tough. It's tough. Are you going to give up every time you face opposition? Are you going to turn your back when things don't go the way you expect? Are you going to check out and play it safe instead of take risks? Are you going to live cautiously, or are you going to live courageously? Are you going to live your best life by pursuing righteousness and have a hunger for excellence? Or are you going to cower down and just be like everyone else? What are you going to do, Jeremiah? And I mean, isn't this how we feel sometimes? Isn't it so much easier to live life when we only have to worry about 3 meals a day, a paycheck, and a warm place to sleep? I mean, how simple could life be if that's all that mattered? Isn't it easier to be pessimistic and melancholy and just say, "Oh, the world's just horrible. It's the worst I've ever seen it." Like, serious. It's easy to grumble. It's easier to be a life-sucking dependent. It's easier to do these things, but I promise you, these things in life are not fulfilling. And that's what God is saying to Jeremiah. God reminds Jeremiah and reminds me, and he reminds you that our life is more than what we think we are capable of. But we just keep drifting. And we're reminded that God gives us strength, that we've been created, knit together in our mother's womb with purpose and passion and intentionality, with a plan, that God has something for us. And we're reminded of this over and over and over, and that he will give us the strength and the courage we need to actually fulfill what we were created for. And when we face challenges and unexpected and unanticipated difficulties, we're often worn out, ready to quit, aren't we? And if we're worn out doing life with the rest of the average, ordinary, everyday people, then what will it actually look like if life actually starts? That's the question. And so God is asking Jeremiah, what do you really want? What is it you really want? Do you want to just move along with everybody else in the crowds? Or do you want to run with the horses? And that's the question. And God doesn't pacify Jeremiah. I love it. God doesn't give Jeremiah a break. Instead, Jeremiah and us, we are invited to embrace God's challenge to rise above ordinary struggles and to pursue a life of spiritual excellence. That's the invitation. And so, I have about 12 final thoughts I want to share with you that I've condensed down to 2. All right? I might sneak a couple more in there. Just be gracious. All right? Some of you are already looking and saying, we got lunch reservations at noon. Listen, I think we got like 12 baptisms or something, so we might be here all afternoon. You all right with that? Some of you are like, no, I'm not. You already exit plans are in motion. So here's what I want to do, just a couple of final thoughts. And the first one, I need you to be really careful not to hear me saying something I'm not saying. Everybody good with that? All right? Because sometimes I'll say things and people are like, oh man, that was real political. It's not. All right, so don't think that. But I want us to understand the heart of God here. And it's so important for us because sometimes living everyday life, like we do, we get off track. And we can forget the heart of God because we're so focused on our life. And so here's what Jeremiah is told. This is what he writes about God's interaction with him. In chapter 1, verse 4 and 5, it says, "Now the word of the Lord came to me and said, before I formed you in your womb, I knew you, and before you were born, I consecrated you, and I appointed you a prophet of the nations." And I think this is really important because we focused on God shaping and molding us, and we're formed and we're knit together in our mother's womb, again, with purpose, passion, intentionality, with a plan. But there's something really important here, and it's that he was appointed a prophet over what? The nations. It's so important to recognize that God has, God does, and God will continue to have nations in his heart and his mind. This is the nature of God. It is. And it's the reality to our faith. And Jeremiah was a prophet to the nations, meaning that he crossed borders and he crossed cultures. He wasn't a prophet just to the Hebrew people, to the nations. He was also a prophet to you and me. That's why this can speak to us today. And so to think Jeremiah fit into one group of people, one nation, one faith, is actually just wrong. It's wrong thinking. Because throughout Jeremiah's entire life and his mission, he fought against small-minded religion. And one of my frustrations about being a Christian in America today is our small-minded religion. Sometimes we're just so tunnel vision when God is doing some things that are so much bigger. And our heads are down and we're just keeping track of ourselves. Does that make sense? And Jeremiah is fighting against this. Throughout his entire life, he fought this. He refused to make the temple comfortable. He spoke again and again and again and again, explaining why they weren't the only people God was interested in dealing with, that he was doing something, that they were a part of something much larger, a worldwide perspective filled with people who are different from us. And I know I've had conversations with Christians like, well, you just can't think that way. And I'm like, hold on. Let's go out through the whole history of the Bible. Abraham in Genesis chapter 12 is told that he's going to be a father of nations, right? And in the end of the Bible, Revelation 21 and 22, we have this large city and it reveals all these nations walking together in God's light to go eat from the tree of life. If you don't like the idea of nations, heaven's going to be a real hard place for you. Make sense? And the mission for every Christian, according to Jesus in Matthew 28, is to go into all the and make disciples. Like, this is so important for us, and I think we just get tunnel vision sometimes. And so this is what I'm going to say, and then we'll move on to the better one, okay? If any of us participate in a Christianity that reduces itself to thinking that we fully understand and we fully grasp everything about Christianity, or if we reduce it to something that we feel comfortable with or makes us feel comfortable, or if we prefer a Christianity filled with insiders who speak our weird language and sing our weird songs and doesn't allow those people in, we want to just keep it safe and build the walls around ourselves to protect us from anything and anybody who might be different than us, then we will keep being like the people Jeremiah is teaching and telling them. You're trusting yourselves, you're trying to manage your own lives, you're trying to manage other people, and you think you're the center of the universe. So I want to reject that kind of Christianity. What kind of Christianity do we want to embrace? We want to participate in God's vision for Christianity, which is participating with what God is doing in me, assuming that God is still working things out in me because I've not figured it all out. If you're close to me, you know God still has a lot of work to do. He has a lot more work to do than some of you, though. And a lot less. But seriously, if you understand, we get to participate what God is doing in us, and then we get to participate with what God is doing around us, where we find ourselves actually thinking outside of ourselves, getting opportunities to demonstrate God's love to other people. Man, how can we be whole if we are cut off from everything that God has created and declared beautiful and good, where God is working his goodness out? If we're blinded to the goodness of God, we're going to miss who God is. So, even John 3:16 said, "For God so loved the world." Right? That's number one. Don't forget about the nations. Number two. Here it is. My challenge is don't get tired living by faith. Don't do it. The Hebrew people of Judah got tired. If you read the end of Jeremiah, they got worn out. They were tired of living by faith. Many of them traveled actually 250 miles back to Egypt. And if you know the story of the Hebrew people, you know that they ended up in Egypt. Abraham actually went to Egypt to find safety and security for his family. And then you can read again later, they end up back in Egypt. They become slaves, and they're content being slaves because at least they know where their food's coming. At least they have homes. At least they have the family. At least they're taken care of. Were they living what God really wanted for them? Absolutely not. But they were content and they were comfortable. So here in Jeremiah's time, they took Jeremiah with them. They move back to Egypt, and Jeremiah's livid. He's like, I've been telling you that God is a personal God, and that he wants to have relationship with you, that he's trying to help you become everything he created you to become. And so then these Hebrew people, they move back to Egypt, and they establish these practices of faith that were totally about an impersonal God. And so the Hebrew people kept wanting to go back to Egypt. And Egypt is not where they thrive. Egypt wasn't where God was inviting them to participate in his work. And you and I often have an Egypt too. And we know in our Egypt we don't thrive. We know in our Egypt that we were just like everyone else. But at least in our own Egypts, I know what's familiar. I know what's coming. My three meals and my house and my paycheck are covered. Life is fine in Egypt. Do you have an Egypt? Is it just me? We do. For some of us, it's going back to our addictions, isn't it? Because at least in this life, I know how to deal with people. At least high or intoxicated, I can tolerate the pain around me. At least here, I know what's familiar. Am I thriving? No. But am I surviving? Yeah. But that over there, it's too hard. It's too overwhelming. I can't do it. Right? We often have an Egypt, and we keep wanting to go back to Egypt, just like God's people in Jeremiah wanted to go back to Egypt. And I get it. In Egypt, they knew what to expect. I mean, imagine how much faith it takes for them to stay. The Babylonians have invaded, they've destroyed the temple, and they've brought mass confusion and uncertainty. And Jeremiah, though, in the midst of all of this, he instructs the people, don't be afraid. How about you set aside your expectations and you live a life of faith? And I guess for them, it just was easier to go back to Egypt, where everything was normal, where everything looked great. And we could get a lot more into this, but there was comfort and there was familiarity and there was order in Egypt for these people. And life was going to be easier and more comfortable. And what I've learned is this: faith invades the chaos. You know when you need faith? Not when things are going the way you expect them to go. You need faith in the midst of chaos. And that's where you find faith. You know where you find peace? You find peace when life seems to be disorganized. I didn't say this first service, but my life has been havoc lately. Not only do I have a kid and a wife who studies at the hospital most of the time, we've torn out our bathroom and it went from one thing to the next thing to the next thing to where you could see the crawl space in about a 4x6 section. And I could put a hot tub in my house. Line it with plastic, fill it with water, and I'd have this, literally. And I don't know if you don't, I like consistency. I like having my things. I like knowing where I'm going to shower. Neighbors have let me in. My in-laws have let me in. I might use the baptistry this afternoon for a bath. I wasn't anticipating telling that, but here I am, right? But it's in the disorganized I find peace. When everything's perfectly right and organized, what's peace? Unity? Unity develops, although very slowly, when there's confusion. Man, we can find faith, we can find unity, and we can find peace when we live a life that's boldly committed to God. And so here's Jeremiah. Jeremiah, let me tell you just a quick summary of what's gone on in his life. He's thrown into prison. Because again, he's saying things and people don't like it. And so what do you do with a guy? You don't just throw him in prison. That's what they do. And then all of a sudden, this Ethiopian eunuch comes by, rescues Jeremiah from the cistern that he was thrown into, expected to die. And then he gets permission from the king and he uses these ropes and all these cloths. They pull Jeremiah out. And so then the king of Babylon allows him to be freed. And he gives Jeremiah this choice. You can either stay in Jerusalem or you can go to Babylon. And what Jeremiah decides is he's going to stay. He's going to stay in the havoc and the chaos and the disorganized. He's going to stay there because he believes that God is going to bring peace and unity. And he believes that God is going to bring faith. And he wants to be a part of it. And he stays there. So he chooses to stay there with the remaining people. And so they get to appoint a governor named Gedaliah. But guess what? They don't like Gedaliah either. So you know what they do to Gedaliah? They kill Gedaliah. And then all the people rise up against Jeremiah again and they say, we're all moving, we're getting out of here, and we're going to move to Egypt where at least there's peace. But God tells them, if you move, you're going to face death from war, you're going to face death from famine, you're going to face death from disease. Just stay where you are. And it's so fascinating to me because the remaining people actually go to Jeremiah and say, Jeremiah, go to your God. And so Jeremiah spends 10 days praying to God, 10 days. And God instructs Jeremiah, you tell the people to stay in the land, stay there. And God promises to build them up and to give them life, to provide for them if they will obey and stay. Guess what? They don't stay. They don't stay. So look at this, Jeremiah 42, verse 10. If you will remain in this land, then I will build you up and not pull you down. I will plant you and not pluck you up, for I relent of the disaster that I did to you. Verse 11 says, do not fear. You don't have to fear. Don't fear the king of Babylon, of whom you are afraid. Do not fear him, declares the Lord, for I am with you to save you and to deliver you from his hand. And then verse 12 says, I will grant you mercy, that you may have mercy on you and let you remain in your own land. But if you say, we will not remain in this land, disobeying the voice of the Lord your God, and saying, no, we will go to the land of Egypt, where we shall not see war or hear the sound of the trumpet or be hungry for bread, and we will dwell there. I get it. Many of you are aware of our journey the last couple of months. And for that reason, I've kind of had some conversations with the Lord about how funny it is that you put Jeremiah on our heart a year ago. And I've been living this the last 2 months. And here's what I'll tell you. It's so easy to be like the people Jeremiah is dealing with. It's so easy to drift. If you're close to me, then you know that I have had a sense for a while that God has been doing something. He's been stirring in us. And I've asked God to see really big things that I believe he's capable of. And it started with me reading the Gospel of John, and I always read through the Gospels. And the Gospel of John, I've studied it, I've preached from it. I mean, I've been in it, but this one particular moment, Jesus is sitting with his disciples, and John records this, and he says, I'm going to send you someone greater than me, talking about the Holy Spirit, and you're going to do things greater than I did. And I've preached on this. If you've been at Mountain View, you've heard this. We've talked about it. I look at what Jesus did, and I think what Jesus did was remarkable and amazing and miraculous and healing, and I'm blown away by everything Jesus did. But then Jesus actually says, you're going to do greater things than I did. And I've been on this 18-month, two-year journey saying, God, if this is real, I want to see it. God, I want to be a part of this kind of thing that you do. I want to see deaf hear and blind see, and I want to see the lame walk, and I want to see diseases healed. I want to see this stuff. You say it. So I've been on this two-year journey, and then Tucker has his injury, and I'm like, all right. God, this is it. You're going to do it. You're going to do it. We're not even going to have to go to rehab because you're going to heal him. And I'm telling you what, it's easy to drift. It's so easy to drift. To where I catch myself sometimes saying, God, if you would just make his hands work, we'll be okay. You start to settle. You start to break down, and we get worn out, and we start drifting back to Egypt saying, why can't things just be the way they were? Why do things have to be so hard? God, if you just help his bladder work better. If you just do that, and you just start to drift, and you start going back, and you start wishing life was just like it used to be. And yet the message that Jeremiah has is stay where you're at. Stay where you're at. I'm not done. I'm not finished. Stay where you're at. Be planted where you're at. My mercy is enough for you. Be where you're at. Don't be afraid. You don't have to be afraid about what's ahead and what's scary, because I am God. It is so easy to drift. And when things are hard, when things are uncertain, when things are disorganized, when things seem to be out of order and chaotic, don't we have a tendency to just want to go back? And the whole message of Jeremiah, don't go back. I have something for you. Don't go back. I'm not finished where I am and where you are. And so this is what I want you to know about Jeremiah. God knows you. You are known. You were known before you knew anything about you, before your mother knew anything about you. You were known. God knows you. Our identity is not based on performance, because I'm telling you what, I've driven back that long road sometimes by myself from the hospital, and I'm like, God, what's wrong with me? Have I not served you enough? Have I not done enough for you? Haven't I not poured myself out enough? Like, why aren't you doing what I want you to do? Man, that's a lie from the pit of hell. It just is. My identity is not based on my performance and what I do and what I don't do. I don't have to run to get God's approval, because He has already approved. God can give me everything I need for relentless authenticity and obedience. For Jeremiah, his obedience actually cost him comfort, cost his reputation, and cost him peace. He didn't even get to see God finish what he was starting. But I know this, God empowers us to live courageously. He doesn't promise, and I wish He would have, He doesn't promise that the run will be easy. He doesn't. But He promises that He'll be present in it. And you can take that to the bank. So as we prepare for our time of communion, I just want to share one more scripture with you. As we move into our time of baptism, and I'm so pumped about the things today. We got to move on. Hebrews chapter 12, great passage of scripture, says this: therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight. Every weight, every burden, every bag of bricks you're carrying with you, we're invited to just lay them aside. Lay them down. To lay aside the sin that just clings to us, the Egypt that we want to go back to. And we're invited to run with endurance the race that has been set before us. And the way we run this race is we fix our eyes on Jesus, who is the founder and the perfecter of our faith, who the joy set before Him. He endured the cross. He despised the shame. And He's seated right now at the right hand of God. Like, that's the promise. And the writer of Hebrews says, so consider Him. Look to Him, consider Him who endured from sinners such hostility against Himself. And I love this last phrase. You look to the cross of Jesus. You look to Him who endured the pain and the shame. You look to Jesus. Guess what? Look at it. You will not grow weary. You will not be faint-hearted. You will have a resistance to drift. If we fix our eyes on Him, knowing that there are saints and people who have gone before us, and it's like this massive arena, and we're running this race that has been hard. It's been like a roller coaster ride, ups and downs and twists and turns, and it's painful, and it's inconvenient, and it's hard. But as we grow closer to that arena, that great cloud of witnesses, they are cheering you on and saying, you can finish. Put your eyes on Jesus, and we will not grow weary. We will not give up. We will not be faint-hearted. In a lot of ways, I feel like the last couple of months have been hell on earth for us. And the only way we've endured is setting our eyes on Him who promises restoration. On Him who promises us hope. And so you're going to have an opportunity. There's a table back here. There's one up there in the balcony. One back here. And there's some juice and some bread. I would encourage you to take the bread, take the juice, eat it. And today, think of Hebrews chapter 12, verse 3. Fix your eyes on him who endured the cross, whose body was broken, whose blood was poured out. And you will not grow weary. You will not wear out. He will give you strength to endure. So if you're new to Mountain View, there's just a couple of tables, two cups, piece of bread in the bottom cup, cup of juice in the top cup. We invite you to eat the bread thinking of Jesus, how he died for you, and drink the juice thinking of how Jesus poured his blood out for you. And specifically knowing that it's in this you have the power to endure. You're free to go.